Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Escana from the Law Office of Rajiv Escana PC, immigration.com. This is a community call for today, December 1st, 2011. We are hosting this call as a community service. By participating in this call, we do not become your lawyers, nor you our clients. This is basically an information session. This call is being recorded. If you do not wish your voice to be recorded, do not speak up. There is no confidentiality, so whatever information you give will be in the public domain. If you want to conceal your identity, make up a name, which is what I would encourage you to do, that might be a good idea. That said, the way we're going to do it is, first I'm going to answer the questions that have been posted in the forums. Always, if you want your question answered, for sure, make sure you post it in the conference, in the community forums. But then if time remains, we will take other questions that are not posted. So first, the posted questions and any follow-ups on those posted questions, then new questions. I think there'll be enough time today. So that said, let me go on to the questions. First question that was posted was from Bwin2K. He says, I'm on L1B with the company A, and they had an H1B approved with company B. Okay, now, one piece of information I don't have is, did you get a change of status approved? You haven't asked me that question, but that's something I would worry about. Because if your H-1B came with a change of status approval to Company B, then you actually worked with Company A illegally because your L-1B was overruled by the subsequent H-1B. If, however, you did not do a change of status, there is no problem. So the question then is, am I subject to the cap? And the answer is no. No. Once your H-1B has been approved and you wish not to be subject to the cap, you can choose that route. The only problem is you could end up losing about 2 years or so of your total 6 years of H-1 time. In any case, that is not a big deal because L-1 and H-1 times are counted anyway. Okay? So really it's not that big a loss. Short answer to your question, can Company C file a new H-1B for me and get cap exemption? And the answer is yes. Is there a USCIS policy? I guess the best thing you can do is, this is not a difficult situation to deal with, but you can also use something called remainder rule. There is a memo on that, remainder rule. You can refer them to that memo. Archie 396. H1, H4, H1. So Archana wants to know, if I used to be on H1, worked a couple of years, 3 years, then went back to H4, what happens? Now if I get a job, can the company file petition? Oh, yes, you are not subject to the cap. If you want to go back to H1, a company can file an H1 for you anytime. You don't have a quota problem. They will get the H-1 approval, let's say, in 2 months, you can start working right away. You don't have to worry about the April-October cycle. But you cannot start working with the receipt. You should wait till the H-1 approval. To the best of my knowledge, USCIS has never, ever said that it's okay for you to start working on H-1 receipt once you've converted to H-4. If you were already on H-1 and you applied for a change of a transfer, change of employer, et cetera, you could start working on receipt. But if you are on H-4 and previously had an H-1, can you start working on a receipt if you apply for an H-1? The answer is probably not. Most probably, I recall USCIS commenting on this, and I'm pretty sure they came out saying, no, you cannot. If I get a new H-1 anytime, how long will it be valid? It will be valid for the remainder of your H-1, not counting your H-4. H-4 is not counted. Okay? Then your question is, why is H-1 transfer preferred over H-4 to H-1? No reason at all. Does H-4 to H-1 cost more than H-1 transfer? Maybe marginally so. I don't know. I don't keep track of the filing fees. Other people in my office do. But it shouldn't be that big a deal. Is there anything I can suggest? I think your big bargaining chip is that you're not subject to the quota. A lot of people are subject to the quota. Is there anything additional they are looking for that becomes a disqualifier? I have no idea, Archana. I'm not sure why the HR people looked at your background and rejected you. It makes no sense to me. Next question, sgoyal.libra. OPT expiring on Feb and need to file H-1B for fiscal year 2013. Well, as you know, if your OPT expires before April 1st, you don't get the advantage of CAPGAP. But if it expires after April 1st and you apply for your H-1 during that time, April onwards, you can actually continue working till October. Okay? That's what CAPGAP is all about. But if it expires, if your OPT expires before April, then you are out of luck. You need to get that 17-month STEM extension so that you can file and get proper CAPGAP extension. Okay? Okay. Can you use the 60-day grace period? I don't think you can, but you can double-check this information. On the ICE webpage, ice.gov, there is actually a complete frequently asked questions, very informative actually, pretty good. It's written fairly plain English. It's not complicated. Just one second. I was trying to make sure that the call is being recorded. It is. Okay. So go to ice.gov and do a search for student or CAPGAP, and you should be able to come up with the frequently asked questions that deal with this kind of situation. And I believe you cannot leverage your 60-day grace period. But if you find out something different, feel free to drop me a line and we can always confirm it for you. But do your homework before you write to me. Enroll in some college and get full-time CPT. This is where all these folks got into trouble with Tri-Valley as well as other universities, because USCIS looks at this arrangement very suspiciously. If, however, you go to a good recognized school and they decide to give you CPT from the very first semester, then there is no problem. Okay. Is there any other way to work on status from March to September? And the answer is no. Saurabh, what you need to do is do a STEM-based extension if your employer can do it. Otherwise, you are stuck with not being able to work till October 1st. And you would have to leave USA and come back. Next question is Dimitri 21. Well, Dimitri has a question that I have answered many, many times in the past few months. The question is, can we port our priority date from one employer to another employer if the old employer revokes the I-140? And you said no one seems to have any concrete answer, and the concrete answer is no. Up until about 8 months ago, USCIS was thinking that they will allow you to port the priority date even if the old employer revokes the I-140. But they seem to have revisited the regulations and the statute about 8 or 9 months ago and come to the conclusion that, in fact, the law does not permit you to port the priority date if the I-140 is revoked. Previously, the law used to be, or at least their interpretation of the law used to be, that unless the I-140 is revoked for fraud and one or two more other reasons, all coming from USCIS, you can carry your priority date forward even if the old employer revokes the I-140. No more. Now they say if the I-140 is revoked, then your priority date is gone. The only exception to this rule is somebody who has taken advantage of AC-21, which means their I-140 is approved and 485 has been pending 180 days, and they have changed jobs to a similar job with another employer. Then if the old employer revokes the I-140, nothing gets taken away. The priority date is yours. The green card is yours. Okay? So you have asked me this, withdrawal by employer, revoked by employer, that's the same thing. Revoked by USCIS for fraud, that's a little different thing. But currently, any revocation or withdrawal loses your priority date. That's the answer. Okay? In fact, I have updated our frequently asked questions with this as well. And on immigration.com, I've answered this question at least twice in the last few months. Manish wants to know, if I file I-485 and is pending, EAD is pending, can I change employer through H-1 transfer? Yes, you can. Will it create problems with 485 filing? It could. If your change of employer means you no longer have the 485 job, then definitely. Government could question and say, wait a minute, you changed over. It doesn't look like you had a 485 job any longer. They can come after it. Is AC-21 portability applicable before 180 days? Well, read my entries on my blog on AC-21. Read Yates' memorandum of May 2005. And the answer is AC-21 portability can be applicable if, even though you ported before 180 days, you were questioned about it only after 180 days. So let's say you port on the 15th day after you filed 485, but USCIS started questioning you only after 200 days, then the fact that you ported too early should not be a problem, because your 485, by the time you were questioned, has been pending 180 days. That's the way I read the law. Can I stay without a job after filing 485? Does it affect my status? And the answer is no. If you're already covered by AC-21, even if you're without a job, it's not a problem. As long as, if questioned by USCIS, you can produce a job letter or a job offer, good faith, of course, for a job that is same or similar to your green card job. So if you stay at home and watch TV all day for 9 months, 10 months, and then one day you get a letter from USCIS saying, you know, we don't prove that you've got an AC-21 job, you produce a job offer which is in good faith and you have started working or are close to working on it, it should not be a problem. Okay? All this is actually in my blog. B. Sundar wants to know, Company A got acquired by Company B. I work for Company A, it got acquired by B. What will happen to the H-1? It shouldn't be a problem. If Company B is willing to keep you with the same role and title in the same location, it shouldn't be a problem. So talk with their lawyers. They should be able to fix it. It's not that big a deal. Bhatti wants to know, OPT, EAD, and client letter questions. Namaste, namaste to you as well, sir. Completed my master's degree F1 visa from U.S. University in 2003. Applied for OPT and EAD. Got 1 year of OPT, EAD. Could not find a job, so you were out of status for about a year. So really the question is, if I'm out of status for 1 year, can I still get my H-1B stamping? And the answer is yes. The fact that you are out of status does not become a bar for H-1. It may become a bar for other visas, but it is not a bar for H-1. Could you please advise me if it creates any problems? No, it should not. That by itself is not a problem. But if you lie about it to the consulate, then you can be barred forever. So just tell the truth. If they ask you, tell the truth. In fact, the form asks you that question. Have you been out of status? You say yes. And you explain whatever that problem was, that you were on OPT and you couldn't find a job. Will it cause H-1B visa denial? It should not. Regarding client letter, is it mandatory? Absolutely. Even with the client letter, consulates are denying so many cases. Without, they are almost certainly going to deny. If client letter cannot be given to visa officer, could visa officer deny H-1B right away? No, usually they issue a 221G. Okay. My company has direct relationship with client without any vendor. Well, here is the situation. If your company actually works on projects rather than just outsourcing, then they may not need a client letter. All they need to show is that they own the project and that the end client is only concerned with the deliverables. In that case, you don't really need a client letter because you are working under your own company's umbrella. You're not working directly for a client. You're working for your own company. If I bring home a project from a client and my team works on it, the team is still my team. It doesn't become the client's team. Okay? So, all right. Now, first thing I'm going to do is ask you guys to ask me questions only on what we have discussed so far. So follow-up questions only. Press star 5 on your phone. Follow-up questions, press star 5. Follow-up questions, press star 5. Okay, let's wait another second or two. Press star 5 on your phone. Okay, no follow-up questions. Oh, there is one. All right, let's take that one first. Area code 925. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. This is Bharti. I posted the question, Rajiv.
Okay. Yours was about the client letter, etc., right?
Yes, sir. Actually, I have follow-up question. Thank you for answering the questions, Rajiv.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. And you mentioned that, I was under the impression that after my master's degree, I got OPT for 1 year. I was under the impression that it is optional practical training, meaning like one could just, you know, just stay without the job. And after that, I was enrolled in PhD. After my master's, I got 1 year OPT and I could not find the job because the economy was not good. Then to maintain status, then at the end of the OPT, optional practical training, I enrolled into a PhD program with the same university. So now you mentioned that it is, but still I'm going to be out of status, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. If you look at the current regulations, I think, allow you to be out of status or without a job only for, I think it's 60 days. And if you have a STEM extension, they allow you to be out of status for 90 days. Okay? So in other words, you have to find a job. It doesn't have to be a paid job, as long as it is a job. Okay? A certain number of hours each week. I think it's 25 or something like that. Now, the weird thing is, before these regulations came into place a few years ago, it wasn't quite clear whether you would be considered to be out of status if you don't have a job on OPT. Okay? So which year was your OPT?
It was like June 2003 to July, next year, 2004, sir, like May 2004.
I think that was covered by that time when the laws were not quite clear. Okay.
So you mean to say that that law came into picture after my OPT?
Yes. 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 The regulations, current regulations, I think came into picture about 5 years ago. But you know what? I don't remember. To me, I've been practicing so long. I've seen the laws evolve so many times. I sometimes lose track of the exact time. When in doubt, reveal the problem. And you can always mention that, you know, whatever the truth is, that you spoke with me in a conference and I did say that the laws were never clear before that, that even if you didn't have a job, you were not considered to be out of status. It is only with the advent of the new regulations that that became a concrete law. And in any case, the fact that you were out of status on an F-1 is no bar to grant of an H-1. Absolutely no bar.
Okay, sir. Thank you. And also, sir, one other last question is that regarding AR-11 form, I was not able to post the same question, sir. AR-11 form, last time when I spoke with you, you mentioned something about that. When I'm filling this, they have the new form online. They're asking for A number. I'm on H-1B visa. I don't have the A number, sir.
You should have an A number. Normally what happens is when students are issued an EAD.
No, sir. I'm on H-1B now, right now.
No,
today.
But you had OPT before that.
Oh, yeah. Long time ago. Yes, sir.
Look at that card. That should have an EAD. It should have an A number.
Oh, yeah. I do have A number.
That's the one you use because you're going to get that same number all your life.
Oh, okay. What if I don't put that number, sir?
Don't do that. Put that number.
I mean, because they're saying it's optional, that's why.
Why not? I mean, we're not trying to hide anything from the government. Please don't do that.
Okay, sir. And one last question, sir. On that same form, present address, I'm going to give my present street address, city and state, but it says those are mandatory fields, but optional fields are, it says if above address is temporary, I expect to remain there, and it is asking for years and months, because I'm living in an apartment, so I don't know how long I'm going to stay in the same address. So it's asking for.
I would just put down till the end of the lease, whatever your lease is, or maybe 1 year, something like that. You don't have to be exact about this, because this is an expectation, not a guarantee.
Okay, so if I don't put that, will I be in trouble, sir? Because these are optional fields, it's not really...
If it's an optional field, I see no problem with it. Don't put it.
Okay, I can put it like 1-2 years, but still I can move out before...
Oh, absolutely. You're not giving a guarantee, you're just giving an expectation.
Okay, sir, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
Okay, it looks like I have one more hand up. Area code 816, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, my name is Saurav. Thanks for answering my question regarding the OPD expiring on February 28.
Haji Saurav, sir, I remember your question. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, actually, I'm already on OPD extension.
So you are on OPD. So that is expiring in February, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there isn't much we can tell you, Saurav. Unfortunately, you already know the options. Actually, in fact, before you even talk with me, you already know the options. I don't see how you can leverage the 60-day period. I don't think you can.
Okay. Yeah, even
but, you know,
like,
I could be wrong because I haven't read the regulations for a while. See, every time somebody asks a question, I like to go back and read the regulations again. But my point is, if you go and read the ICE website, they actually have a very, very nice frequently asked questions on this.
Okay.
And read up on that. If something is not clear, go ahead and let's talk again in the next conference call.
Okay, sure. And I have one more question. If I enroll in some college and get the full-time CPD, so in April, if I file my H-1 and let's say it get approved in May or June, do I still have to continue on CPD till end of September? Or
yes, because your H-1, even though approved before October, does not become effective till October 1st.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
It's like me giving you a post-dated check. That you know, the check will be, I'll give you a check valid July 1st. If you try to deposit now, you'll get nothing out of it.
Okay.
So it's a post-dated approval.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Good luck to you.
I have to find it about college. Thank you. Thank you.
No problem, sir. Good luck. All right, guys. Anybody who has any question, press star 5. Anybody who has any question, press star 5. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, let's get started in the order you had logged in. Connecticut, 203, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. Ratan here.
Haji Ratanji, what's up?
I posted my question not on the forum, but on the main EB2 page that you have, and you replied to that on November 11th. Thanks a lot.
Did I ask you to join us in the conference?
You wanted me to listen to the 17th conference call, and
right. And you did that,
but I heard it in detail, and it was regarding basically changing it to EV2 from EV3.
Okay. So tell me what your issue is instead of us talking about the past. Tell me what's going on.
Okay. So I have overall 14 years of experience with 10 years in US. And I entered in June 2001. I was working with one company.
Let me stop you for a second so I focus on what you need to ask me. Let's start in the reverse order. What is your question?
My question is really about changing to EB2 category.
Okay.
Like, can I?
Then here's what I need to know. Tell me about your degrees first.
Okay. So I have 3 years BSc plus NIIT plus a couple of other courses that I have done.
Okay, courses, discard them. They don't matter.
Okay.
NIIT, is that a post-graduation diploma or is it just a diploma?
It was just a diploma.
Okay, so that means we can't combine that with the degree. What does that leave us with? Just 1 3-year degree. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. But here's what you need to do.
After that, I also... joined Carnegie for my master's, but I couldn't complete that. I had to go back.
Now, this is a zero-sum game. Either you have the degree or you don't have the degree. Just having a few courses is not going to help you.
Okay.
Okay.
But for those courses, I got the certificates, and obviously they don't count as.
None of that counts. It's either a degree or it is not a degree. So, your best bet, of course, you can argue that you're an exceptionally qualified individual with 10 years of experience. I don't think you'll make it. Most people don't, but you can try. But your more reasonable bet is for you to finish a degree. And actually, I just checked this issue last week with some of the evaluators, and I was told that there is no law really on online American degrees. As long as the degrees are regionally accredited, so if it's a Virginia degree and Virginia Department of Education recognizes that as a valid degree, you can use it. My advice would be do a master's degree.
Okay. So that means like that is the first and that is the option.
That appears to be the only option.
Okay, that's the only option.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because in one of those comments I saw, and I quoted that also, it was from you only, that you are confined to the language that is used in the labor certification.
Mm-hmm, but that doesn't mean that if you put the language in that, you know, I have a PhD, and even if you don't have the PhD, it becomes a PhD. No. You are confined negatively by the language that you've used. But if you try to increase your qualifications beyond what they actually are, government is not bound by it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you call your three-year bachelor's degree as a U.S. bachelor's degree, it doesn't become like that. So the point is, you are bound by the language of the labor certification to your disadvantage, not necessarily to your advantage.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. So basically, that foreign equivalent and progressive 3 years cannot be combined together.
That can be combined only for H-1 purposes. See, we have to look. Remember one thing. Lawyers have to eat also. So we make the laws so complicated that nobody can understand them. That's the whole trick. So for H-1, the laws are different.
Yeah.
For H-1, you can combine 3 years of education with 3 years of experience. For each year of college you don't have, you can add 3 years of experience. That's fine. But you cannot do that for green card.
Okay. So basically now the next question I have is like, October 28th, my project got over and I got another project. I got the client letter and I'm in between transferring my H-1 to another employer. So now if I go to that employer, that's what I was thinking of trying to file on EB-2, since you advised that EB-3 is the best bet, staying as is wherever it was.
Yeah.
With the new bill being passed, Wait.
The bill has not become law yet. That's something I've been asked quite a lot. Look, every year, many, many immigration bills surface and die, like bubbles in water. Until I see the bill pass the Senate, I won't even think about it. I won't even read it.
Okay. So, I mean, there's no point keeping hope on that.
No, sir. There is no point at all. After the bill passes both houses, then it goes before President. Of course, Obama would sign something like that, hopefully. But, it's not just because one house passes something doesn't mean it gets enacted into a law.
Yeah, that's clear.
Okay.
So, but if that happens and it becomes law, how long does it take to get enacted, or it becomes the law the day President signs?
Most of these cases, a bill in which, for example, they're doing away with per country limit, it should become the law right away.
Okay.
But you know then what will happen? Then the 485 wait time will become tremendous.
Yeah.
Okay. But still better than having, this odd law. And I've always had a problem with this law. How silly is this? A country like Vatican with population of, 600 people, and a country like India, 1 billion plus, or China, 1 billion plus, has the same raw number of employment-based visas, 7,000 per year or whatever it is. That makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this whole law is very, and again, I use that expression with some deference that it's very idiotic. It doesn't make any sense in the context of today's environment. It may have made sense 30 years ago when the law was enacted. It doesn't make any sense anymore.
Yeah, which is why I'm hopeful that many of us are hopeful that it may become
law. You know, this, look at this, guys. Here's what I had a discussion with this on the Hill the other day. A couple of people were talking about, oh, immigration laws are working fine. I said, well, you guys don't know what you're talking about. When immigration laws were enacted, especially in the employment context, they were never expected to be so time-strained. I mean, when I did my own green card, the labor cert used to take about 6 months. Labor cert to, I mean, start to finish. Everything all included was about 6 months. Okay? So today you file the labor cert, in 6 months you got your green card. That's how short the time was back in 1993. Those days, these laws made sense. What is the sense of the law that says you cannot get a promotion while your green card is pending? Wait a minute. You want me to wait 8 years, 9 years, 10 years on EB-3 and not get a promotion? That makes no sense. So the laws have been rendered senseless or nonsensical because of the tremendous amount of waiting time. That was never counted for by the lawmakers. It is time they got back together and did something about it. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah. One more question. That is, now since I'm changing to this new employer, would it be just because my 485 is not there, only 140 is approved with the previous company, but just by filing AC-21, it would be...
You cannot do an AC-21 until 485 is filed and pending 180 days.
Okay. So there is no law that 140 has been... filed 2 years ago and it was approved 2 years.
There is no such law.
Okay, so that means until and unless the new employer files a new new green card again, and then the old 140 is attached to it.
No, the old I-140 can be revoked, and if it is revoked, you get nothing.
Okay, so I mean I'm sure that my old employer is not going to revoke that 140.
Well, then you are okay. You get the priority date forward.
Okay.
Let me go on to the next questions. I've got five other people, okay? Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Area code 512, go ahead, please. Area code 512.
Hey, Rajiv, Akhil this side again for the record.
Rajiv, Akhil, bolo.
I have only two questions. Do I have to disclose to my employer that I got arrested for the reckless driving because my H-1 extension?
That's not a question about immigration law. That's a question about personnel law. Under immigration law, there is no such obligation.
So I don't have to disclose to them that I got arrested.
Under immigration law, there is no such requirement. But
they don't have to tell in the extension application.
Wait, listen to me. In the extension, if there is any question asked of you, you have to, of course, answer it truthfully. But if there is no question asked, there is no requirement under immigration law to voluntarily disclose these things.
Okay, so there is nothing to disclose on the application form.
If there is nothing to disclose, there is no obligation for you to do so.
But
I'm cautioning you. I don't know your company's policies or the contract you've signed with your employer or the labor laws of the state that you're in. So you may want to talk with an employment lawyer locally as well.
Okay, because it was in my company is in Chicago, and basically I told them, but to the lawyer I didn't tell. I told to the HR.
Okay.
They were saying that it's fine, but I'm just asking you, I have to tell them again or not?
There is no immigration law imposes no obligation on you.
Okay, that's fine. And second thing, can I get some letter from you in next few months when I plan to go to India that I am not ineligible to get the visa on this case?
What I want, that's why I asked you to talk with a local lawyer.
Actually, Rajiv, I'm not able to find any local lawyer in Florida who can guide me. That's why.
My question to you is this. When you said you went through the court process, you must have hired a lawyer in Florida to defend you.
That is a criminal lawyer.
So what I want you to do is, look, I'm pretty busy. I don't want to take on a case that I might have some time. I mean, of course, we'll find the time if we take the case. But if you can get yourself a lawyer locally in Florida,
okay,
through the lawyer who defended you, because most criminal defense lawyers have to have connections with local immigration lawyers because they do it for a living.
Okay, got it.
The reason I would, it will save you some time and money is because the local lawyer will have to look at the Texas statute and the Texas procedures. I'm sorry, make it Florida. Florida statute and the Florida procedures to do the analysis that I told you about. One,
okay.
Is this a conviction? Two,
no, it is not.
Is it a conviction for moral turpitude? Three, is it covered by the petty offense exception? So
okay.
I would rather have a Texas lawyer do it who would already be familiar with those precedents and those procedures than us sitting in Virginia and New York doing it for you.
Okay.
You know, so that's I'm trying to save you some time and money.
Okay, so basically I have to provide the state's specific document to the USCIS.
Talk with your defense lawyer in Florida and ask him for a referral to an immigration lawyer they work with.
Okay, but as per you, I should not be ineligible with all this condition what I have.
Assuming that it is not a conviction, it should not
be. It is not conviction. It is just a misdemeanor.
Wait, look, you are not qualified to answer that question, and neither am I until I have looked at the law. Trust me.
I got it.
This
okay,
is a lot more
it.
Complicated than you think it is. So,
okay.
Get yourself a lawyer who can take a look at it.
Okay? I got it.
Good luck, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay, three more questions to go, guys. Oops, I messed that up. 1 second. Oh, man, these touch screens drive me nuts. Just give me 1 second, okay? I don't know what I did. All of a sudden, I've lost the screen. Okay. Submit. 1 second. All right. Much better. Area code 925. Go ahead, please. 925.
Yeah. Hi, Rajiv. Actually, thank you for doing this, Rajiv. I have a question on DS-160 form.
Mm-hmm.
They are asking, like, have you made specific travel plans? There are two options. One is yes and another is no. Under yes, if I select yes, they are asking for provide a complete itinerary for your travel to the U.S.
If you have not bought a ticket yet, the answer is no.
Okay. Sir, actually, I'm going to India for visa stamping. So I'm going to India and I have the date of departure
ticket
from U.S. and date of arrival in U.S. already.
Okay. Then you put down that date.
But what they are asking is date of arrival in U.S., arrival flight and arrival city, which I know, which I'm going to come back.
Hmm.
However, underneath, they are asking date of departure from U.S., which I don't know. Once I come back, I don't know when I will go back.
You will just say N.A., not applicable.
They have S and no, sir. So under S, they have date of arrival in U.S., which I think I will... Does it mean that I will come back to U.S., right, sir, after visa stamp?
The date of arrival in USA means I'll leave India on XYZ date, I'll come to USA on ABC date, something like that.
Okay. After that, I don't have departure.
You don't have departure plans from USA. These forms are very defective, actually. They're not the best forms in the world. So can you not say NA there, not applicable?
No, sir. There are only two options, S and no. The problem with under no is that under no option, we have you made specific travel plans? If I say no, then it says intended date of arrival, which I will come back, let's say, January 15, 2012. I can put that.
Okay.
And there is another question, intended length of stay in U.S.
You would say as allowed by law.
There are some boxes, sir. It says number of years they're asking.
Put down the number of your H-1 years. That's the best you can do.
Yeah,
I mean,
sir, actually the problem is that I have H-1 like 2.7 years, and I don't know if I have to put, 2.5. I don't know if I have to put 2 or 3.
I would just put 2 years.
Yeah, okay. If I put 2.5, it's throwing an error, sir.
Yeah, I can understand. See, these forms are very poorly drafted, and I think even State Department knows that they are. So... And if there is any question raised, you can always blame me for it, that I advise you to do that.
Sir, thank you, sir. One follow-up question is that if I do S or no by mistake or unintentionally because it's so confusing, would it cause any visa denial or anything
like that? I don't think so. these are relatively very minor questions. I'm not concerned about it.
Okay, sir. And one last question is that under the, have you made specific travel plans? If I select no, they are saying person or entity paying for your trip, like your company or self or things like that.
If you are paying for it, self, if it's your company paying for it, find out where they are so maybe I can apply for a job with them also.
I'm sorry, sir?
I said if your company pays for your travel, maybe I should apply for a job with them as well.
Okay. I think probably they're asking for if you are an L1, probably the company must pay.
No. Actually, there is no such requirement. None of the visas require, as far as I remember, H2. No, none of the visas require that the company has to pay for the travel.
So I'm on H1, sir, so I can put self?
Self. The only time H1 employer is required to pay is if they fire you before your time is up in USA.
Okay, but other than
they have
than
to
that,
pay you a ticket back to your home country, but nobody is required to pay you from home country to USA.
Or the other way around, from US to India if you're on vacation, correct, sir?
Not on vacation, no. They don't have to pay it. No, sir.
Okay. Sir, one last question is that on the DS-160 form, I need to mention my experience. If I mention my experience, so should it match with LCA, like what they mentioned, or can I put some? Because
Look, don't go into matching. Just tell the truth, whatever the truth is.
Okay.
All these forms are filed under penalty of perjury. Be very careful. Tell the truth. Don't go into matching and stuff. If you made a mistake somewhere else, don't repeat that mistake again and again.
Okay, sir. Actually, the thing is on the because when my company when they filed it, they filed it as a systems analyst, and under that systems analyst, they do like different varieties, as you know, analysis, design, development. But I do analysis and design, but not really like maybe like 20% of design, but development I don't do. I'm not a developer. When you actually try to work for a client, they have their own specific needs. They are not in the books.
You told the client, I don't care. If you lie through your teeth to the client, I don't care. But you don't lie to the government.
Okay, sir. What I'm trying to get into is, like, client has a different roles and responsibilities than the one that is LCA. It's kind of similar, sir, but so should it match?
This is a question that's very dangerous. I will not answer it because until I've seen your papers and analyzed them in detail, I will not answer that question. Let me give you a general answer.
Okay.
General answer is, this is what I sense from you. What you're telling me is that, look, my LCA job description and what I actually do are not exactly the same. They're kind of similar, but not exactly the same.
It is actually systems analyst is the LCA, but I'm doing as a business analyst.
Let me finish. Am I right so far?
Yeah, meaning like in my job, there are like very specific details of what they mentioned in LCA.
Okay, look.
Lower level details.
The moment you say there's a discrepancy between what I do and what the job description is, I cannot answer that question or the implications of that until I've seen the actual facts. Talk to your lawyer. If there's a problem, tell them to amend the H1. What is the big deal?
Okay.
Okay? So
yes, sir. Because
I cannot answer that question without knowing more details.
Sir, when I go for visa stamping, I'm a systems analyst as in
I'm going to put you on hold. I have one more caller. I don't want to keep them waiting because we've spent enough time. I'll come back to you.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. 618, go ahead, please.
Hey, Rajiv, sir.
Yes, sir.
Hello. Yeah.
I can hear you.
My name is Samir.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a PFO and H1B visa interview in the second week of May.
Okay.
And I submitted all my paperwork in the second week of June.
All right.
For some reason or the other, they had redirected my case to the National Visa Processing Center in Kentucky.
Okay, so basically they're investigating the case.
Yeah, they are investigating it. But because actually I had enrolled in probably some kind of a university like the tri-valley thing. After my H1 got, I was laid off in 2010. So I enrolled in a similar university to a tri-valley university thing. And I got my H-1B transferred. They had approved my H-1B till 2012.
Okay.
So primarily, I haven't heard from them till from the second week.
Let me ask you a quick question. Normally,
normally
when cases are referred to Kentucky, it is a lot more serious than merely, well, not necessarily a lot more serious, but it should be something more meaningful than merely getting a CPT while working for a or while attending a university. It should be something more than that. My suspicion is it could be something to have to do with the employer. Okay.
Mm-hmm. No, my employer had even got his H-1B's from countries like from Pakistan or some African countries. I, being an Indian, he has got some people from those kind of countries where usually.
Just because some H-1s have been approved doesn't mean that the employer is out of trouble. These things are very unpredictable.
No, this employer had even forwarded me the client letter, the end client letter where I was working for, stating that I had some kind of particular position available.
Okay. Once again, I repeat what I just told you. I do not know what exactly is going on, but the fact that you got a CPT with some university should not become a problem for your H-1. We have so many people from Tri-Valley University who went outside USA, got a visa stamp, and came back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So whatever that investigation is, it should be something more than just the university.
Okay.
My guess.
May I know, like, how much time frame do they usually take after the last week of September? They updated
Nobody
my case online.
Nobody knows the answer to that question. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. In case of they reaffirm my petition, do I have to appear for another interview at the
You should market? Not. You should not. If they are done with their questioning, they should just say, submit your passport, stamp the visa, and they'll give it back.
Uh-huh. They're
right?
Not asking me for another set of documents and paperwork.
Well, they can. But normally, at this point, if they have taken so long, they shouldn't.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay, it looks like I have three more. One old and two new. All right. 201, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
I wanted to give you some backstory on my case. I was in EB-3 with December 2004 priority date with Company A. That company had purchased another small company in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2009, they had an opening there for a higher level position, and they wanted me to join that company, so they applied in EB-2. And I got my green card in 2010 of June. So now, and I've been working for them ever since for the past 17, 18 months now. So what's happening now, because of the bad economy now, they are having that company that they bought, they might have to shut that company down, and they're actually laying people off.
You have no problem. You've worked there so long, there's no problem at all.
So I'm good. Do I have to file any paperwork or anything? If I switch
no, but you do have to, if you change your home address, every time you do that, you have to file AR-11.
AR-11? Nothing else? No AC-20?
Yeah,
no
you
other.
Have nothing to worry about. You're fine.
Can I also change fields?
Can you change
right
fields? Yes, of course. You are free as a bird. You can change fields. You can become a playwright, a TV actor, a film actor, go to Bollywood, anything you want.
But Bollywood
is
back in India,
right?
It's
here. Bollywood, you can sit here. One of those important.
Okay,
like Katrina, go so there, act and come back.
Oh, so I'm outsourcing Bollywood now.
No, but really, seriously speaking, within USA, you can do whatever you want now. You paid your dues to the system.
Is anything affects my GC or the old Y-40 because the company is not going to exist starting next year? Does that affect me anyways?
No, nothing.
It does not?
No.
Oh, okay, so I'm pretty much good as free and good to go.
Absolutely,
right,
free as a bird.
All right, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay, now I still have one old and three new. So let me start again going back. We have about 10 minutes left, but I'll do my best. Going back to the person who called in the earliest in the queue. Area code 980, go ahead, please. Oops, sorry. 980, go ahead, 980. 980.
Hi, Raju. How are you?
Good, good, sir. How are you?
Good, good. I'm on L1 visa, Raju, and my wife on L2. You know, right, L2 people can directly apply for EAD.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that, and she worked for some time. And in 2010, due to lack of work, her employer laid off her, and
mm-hmm.
she collected unemployment benefits.
I don't think it's a problem.
And my employer, I mean, applied green card this year,
mm-hmm.
and my 140 got approved on under EB1.
Mm-hmm.
So currently, my 485 and our 485 is pending. So
mm-hmm.
because of that unemployment, it causes any problem for our
Oh, no, not at all. No problem. Unemployment mm-hmm. is private insurance. It has nothing to do with government benefits.
Okay.
Even though
and
the check comes from the government, it's a privately paid in insurance. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Okay. And while submitting all my forms to ESAS, my company lawyer, I mean, they didn't send me my W-2 or W-2, whatever the unemployment that form, 1040G. They just sent federal tax form and state tax form. So they don't know who collected this unemployment payments by looking at that. So that will not be a problem?
No, unemployment is never a problem. The only problem is when there's means-tested benefits. This is not a means-tested benefit. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Right. Thanks a lot, Roger.
You're welcome. No problem. Okay. So we've got two new... Oh, no, there's more. Three new and one old. Okay, let's see how many we can do. Sir, I don't see, or ma'am, I don't see your area code, so you're probably calling from voice over IP of some kind, Vonage or something like that.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Manish here.
Hi, Manish. Bolo.
Yeah, I posted the question regarding whether I can stay without a job after filing for 485. But the background behind that is like,
my question was,
if my H1... Hello?
I'm sorry. Remind me. You are an OPT case? Is that what it was?
No. My question was regarding 485, if it is pending.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I'm without
AC
a job.
AC21 questions, and can I stay, and, you know, if I have filed the AC21 or I-485, do I have to have a job, something like that, right?
Yeah, but the background behind that is if my H1 is denied, can I still stay and wait for my green card?
If your 485 is pending, absolutely.
Without working and without with my H1 denied as well.
Yeah, as long as you can demonstrate that you have a job. If it is before 180 days, you would have to demonstrate that the green card job from the employer who applied for us is still available. If it's after 180 days, then a green card job from anybody with a similar job description.
Oh, so basically I have to find a job. Because I can just sit at home and wait for my GC.
Eventually you would have to, yes. Because if USC has questions it, they want to see that you have a same or similar job.
Oh, okay.
It is tied into your job, yes. You cannot just be without
it. But even if my H1 is denied, I can still stay and look for a job?
Yes, absolutely. As long as your 485 is pending, you are in authorized period of stay.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay. And once I get my EAD, I can surely shift or whatever, look for a job and shift.
You can, yes, sir. But now the question is, it's all about the 180-day deadline. If your 485 has been pending 180 days, that makes you very safe. But if it is before 180 days, what if USCIS sends you an RFE, says, you know, demonstrate to us that you have the job that got you the green card, that's supposed to get you the green card, then you would have trouble. If it's after 180 days, then you have to produce a job offer about same or similar job from anywhere in the country.
Okay.
So it's all about the 180 days.
Okay, got it.
Okay, good luck.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Ajay.
You're welcome. Okay, I've got two new and one old. Let's try one more. Area code 412. Go ahead.
Hey, Rajiv, this is Vinay.
Hi, Vinay.
And I have posted my question. That was the first question, but I joined late. Basically, I'm trying to transfer from L1 to H1. And
right, I've answered that question. Look, I'm not going to repeat myself. That's a waste of my time. And I have, right now I have four other people waiting, so I'm still going to try to make as many as I can.
Okay.
Bottom line was, did you get a change of status, L1 to H1?
No, not yet.
Okay. Did your H1 approval come with an I-94?
See, that was for that was back in 2006.
No, but did it come with an I-94?
No, that was a CP.
Okay. Then, absolutely, there is no question in my mind, you are not subject to the quota.
Okay. But this was 6 years back, and I never used it.
My only problem is, if it was 6 years back, then you already are out of 6 years of
H1. Sorry, not 5 years back. It was in
the See, then you're already out of L1, H1 combined, because your L1 is also counted towards your H1.
Right, but I entered only in 2007.
In 2007?
Yeah, I entered in 2007.
When was the H1 approved?
The H1 was approved in 2006.
Yes, 2007. You should, 2006, 2012. So you should still have about 1 year of H1 left, right?
Yeah, but I entered on L1.
You entered on 2007, right?
Yeah, on L1.
On L1.
Right.
Because if you want to be exempt from the H1 quota, there is going to be some issue about remainder. Your lawyers have to sit down and work out the numbers, but you definitely have some time left on your H1. How much, I don't know. I'll have to sit down and calculate for you.
That is already being calculated. My only concern is the cap exemption. The only
no problem. You are not subject to the cap. Of that, I'm sure.
Even if I was never on H1?
Even if you never got took H1, no problem.
Okay. That sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Two new and one old. Let's try. Somebody from a voice over IP, go ahead, please.
Hi, Aziz. Yes. And last time, I asked for IA24, he asked to send me an email to Chennai Consulate.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you just said.
So this is regarding IA24.
IA24, okay.
Yes. You asked me last conversation, you asked me to send an email to Chennai Consulate, which I did.
Okay.
I
asked you to check whether they will accept attorney-certified I-140.
Yes, but they sent an email saying that they are moving immigration visa processing to Mumbai consulate.
All right, then you contact Mumbai consulate.
And asking them me to contact at end of December.
Okay.
So I sent my IA24, receipt, I-140, and all the documents, marriage, birth, and, GC copy.
Okay.
My question is, when I send an email at the end of December, what other documents should I send to avoid wait time, and when can I expect the interview?
Well, I do not know the answer to what documents. It depends upon the consulate, whatever they ask you to send.
Or should I wait until I hear from them?
You have to wait until you hear from them, yes, sir.
Okay, so it looks like they're shifting it to Mumbai, where they have a new consulate now.
Okay, well, then you need to contact Mumbai and find out whether they accept AC21, and if they do, what do you need to send them?
Okay, so if you're not sure they accept it, should I find from them they accept it?
Yeah, it's not even sure they would accept it. Not every consulate does.
Okay. So then good luck. I should send it. Okay.
Yes, sir. Good luck to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, I still have, let's see, two new and one old. Okay, let's try this one. Area code 980, go ahead, please.
Hi, Raja. I just talked to you a couple of minutes back regarding that unemployment benefits. I have one more question, please. Actually, I'm planning to travel India in first week of January, and currently my 485 is in pending. So if it is not approved by that time, so if I go India and if it is, any problem with that 485, then can I enter with using that my AP?
Look, that's a fairly long question. You should take it with your take it up with your lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, if you have an L1 visa, there should not be any issue in traveling and coming back, even after the I-485 gets approved.
Okay, but I don't have the active visa. I have that L1 papers only.
Yeah, you will need to get a visa stamp. That's a little dangerous. I think you should get with your lawyers and see if they can get you the advance parole before you travel.
Yeah. I got my advance parole. And my question is, is there any problem with my 485? Can I travel on my AP? Advance parole.
I don't know what kind of problem. If your 485 is denied, of course, AP is no longer good. You'll have to get an L1 visa to come back in.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, got it. Thank you, Rajiv.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, guys, let me see if there's how many other questions I can answer. I'll try as best as I can. I think the number of questions keep multiplying, but let's try again. Okay, this one is out. And now, area code 201, go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, area code 201, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. We've spoken just a couple minutes back to the outsourcing Bollywood, where my sister company is
down. Oh, yes,
yes, down.
Of course. Bollywood is the
I just had like two, I think that's a good way to recognize. I just had like two follow-up questions. John, if the parent company offers me a job, though, can I join them again now?
Arey, bhai, aap kuch bhi karo.
Now, as far as
your freedom is concerned, you are as free as a U.S. born citizen.
Okay, and traveling, they don't care if I don't have a job.
You can't abandon your permanent residence in USA and just go live somewhere else. But other than that, within USA, you can do whatever the heck you please. You can stay at home.
Short trips also, like what, 2-3 weeks, whatever.
Honey, wo to koi problem nahi. Only time you have to worry when your trip is more than 6 months or when you are leaving USA after having wound up your affairs here.
Oh, okay. No, that's the fair that's still here. All right, thank you, sir. That's
no problem. Good luck.
Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more new area code 203. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv Ratan again. Just a quick question regarding the masters. When you said like I'm in complete masters. Now I'm on H1. Remember in H1 forms, there is a checkbox for are you planning to study? So now my H1 is in 2014. As per your suggestion, I would like to go and do something starting from next summer. So do I have to send any letter or anything to USCIS or like fill up any new forms?
I'm a little lost. Remind me exactly what your situation is. I don't remember.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ratan Agarwal from when I did the incomplete master's from Carnegie, and you.
Oh yes, yes. Acha. Mm-hmm. Right. And we talked about, and I said you should do a master's degree online if you have to. Okay, go ahead then.
So I'm thinking rather than going online, I would do something. I'm in the state of New York, so I'll do it in state.
Mm-hmm.
And
so would you quit your employment?
No.
Okay, I think for something like this, since the plan is so incomplete, you can just say NA and not say anything about it, because if you change your mind sometime in the future, that's fine. Nobody's going to question that. Normally, this question is directed more towards people who are on a tourist visa.
Okay, so that means if I plan to go...
If you say not applicable to it and later on change your mind, it's not a problem.
Okay, and then if needed, then it changes to a four month.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, thank you.
Right. You're welcome. Okay. The last new question that I'm going to take, then I'm going to try to go back to area code 925 and see if I can finish the rest of his questions. I don't know if I have enough time, but I'll try. You are from area code, well, the area code is not shown. Voice over IP, go ahead. You logged in at 2:30 p.m.
Hi, Rajiv. How are you?
Good.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean, my question is I went for H4 stamping in India, and they put like administrative processing. It seems to be like they already verified my wife's employment, and it's taking like more than 5 months. Until now, like they didn't post anything. I'm with a TV background. So do you think, can I go with the lawyer, or do you want me to wait more time?
I don't think going to the lawyer is going to do anything.
Pardon me?
I do not think lawyers can help at this point of time. You're going to have to wait till the investigation is over. Okay?
Okay, yeah. But it's taking, they're taking much time, like more than...
Well, I think going to a congressman's office, your wife could probably go to a congressman's office and get you more help.
Oh, can she go to a congressman's office and...
She can call
they
a congressman's
to
office.
From there.
They usually do, yes.
Okay. But
if you want to know how to do it, if you want to know how to do it, just go to immigration.com, type in congressman, one word, and you should pull up a document that explains to you how to contact a congressman.
Okay, but from my end, like, there is no ways, like...
Nothing that
I
you
can't,
can
I mean, just I'm approaching through emails and calls. And
that's all you can do. There really isn't anything
telling,
concrete.
Like,
no, sir. You cannot do anything.
Yeah. Like, it's an administrative processing.
What is the question again?
Hello?
Yeah, what is the question?
I'm keep on sending emails and contact them.
Well, that's all you can do. I mean, if something is under investigation, there is nothing you can do to move it.
Okay. She can do from her end. Okay, I will check it out, sir. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. I am going to put another 2 minutes into the last question. Area code 925, go ahead, please.
Yeah, sir. Thank you so much for getting back with me, sir.
Sure.
In general, should LCA job requirements, roles and responsibilities, should they match with the ones that we mentioned on DS-160 roles and responsibilities, sir? In general,
there should be nothing but the truth all across your immigration paperwork.
Including the H-1B resume and my manager?
Yeah, resume, anything you submit to the government should be 100% truthful. If you have submitted a resume that has been, basically exaggerated for a client, I don't worry about that.
Okay. Sir, the resume that we submit for H-1B USCIS.
That, of course, should be truthful.
Okay, sir. Yeah, that is truthful. But when we go for visa stamping, will it be, I know that I-797 form will be available in Kentucky.
Yeah, they have a complete copy of your H-1 paperwork, yes.
Even in KCC, they will have even resume and everything, sir?
They should, yes. Because H-1 is submitted in duplicate, one copy goes to KCC.
Okay, sir. Sir, so basically, how many roles and responsibilities do I need to mention for the experience on DS-160? Because
sir, look, I have not filled a DS-160 in my whole life.
Okay.
I don't fill forms. I haven't filled a form in the last 25 years of my life. But when an issue arises, I do look at forms if a client runs into a difficult problem. Bottom line is this. Follow whatever the instructions are, tell the truth. If you have any problem about telling the truth, get together with your lawyers. If they have submitted something which is not true, ask them how to fix it.
Sir, actually, I already bought the ticket. I'm going in January.
I really don't care. I really don't care because the problem is the world does not revolve according to your ticket. It revolves around according to the truth. Any misrepresentation on immigration forms can lead you to permanent bar from entering USA. Permanent bar. Okay.
Sir, actually, what happened is when I spoke with my lawyer, what they said was it's a big company. It's like 50,000 employees. What they said was it's a systems analyst. It's an overarching,
Get something in writing from them.
Okay. And, sir, and also, actually, in my LCA, one last question, sir. In LCA, it says systems analyst, senior system analyst that I'm the lead. I have like I'm managing 8 or 10 people team. But right now in this project, I'm not managing. In previously, I did. And
I'm sorry. I really cannot answer any of these questions without looking at your paperwork.
Okay.
I don't mean to worry you, but at the same time, what you're asking me is like a doctor being asked by a patient to be diagnosed over the telephone without looking at the patient. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It cannot be done. I
would
not do it.
Yeah.
Let me finish. I cannot do it, and I will not do it. So we will not carry on this conversation right now. You need to get together with your lawyers, and if you have any doubts about it, get something in writing from them.
Yeah. Okay, sir. Thank you.
Good luck.